Okay, welcome everybody. The title is slightly different, I know, from what it says outside. When I actually started putting this presentation together, I've been doing some research on the new search capabilities in 2013 for various customers, and I realized that it's not just about the search box, so that was only a tiny part of what I could possibly show you today. So actually this is just like how you can leverage search in 2013 and customize it to give a better search experience. So I'm a senior consultant at Provoke. I'm also a SharePoint MVP, and I run a user group in Auckland as well. And I've worked with SharePoint since the very first versions. So I've been all the way through from the Tahoe era. It's kind of showing my age a bit, I suppose. If you want to contact me afterwards, that's my Twitter handle. I'll put it up later. We've got quite a bit to cover, so I'm going to run at pace. So if you have a question, then write it down, because you'll probably forget the end. So if you could just write it down and then ask me towards the end, otherwise we'll probably won't get through all of the content. We're going to start very much at a high level in terms of business user type approach and what you can do with search just as a search administrator. And then we're going to get down into some JavaScript, right? So if you're on the dev side, I'll show you some dark JavaScript. If you're on the pro user, then you'll learn something about how you can customize the look and feel, but you'll also learn a lot about how you can change the search from an administration perspective. Right, let's get started. So what is your expectation when you search? And I think this has changed a lot over time. You used to go into a search engine, type in some random words, and hope you get a search result. And we're talking about internet search engines, right? Now, over time, the search engines have actually taught you how to search. You may not have realized it, but have actually got you to write phrases in certain ways. For instance, this one. Anyone use this one? Yeah, a few people. Did everyone know you could do this? Yeah? And what did you expect when you typed that in, right? I think everyone gradually learned it over time. And you can do all sorts of other things. It doesn't have to be NZ dollars. It could be grams into ounces and things like that. But what it's done here is it said, well, this is what I think you wanted. Right? It didn't look for things to do that contained the word convert and NZD. It also did that, but it said the thing I think you want most is probably the answer to your question. Right? What about this one? I'm actually going over to the MVP Summit soon, so I thought I'd say, what places to visit in Seattle? And actually, kindly, it came up and said, well, these are all great places you might want to visit in Seattle. But it's actually changed the way it looks. It didn't just give me a set of links, it gave me a set of pictures, because if you're a visitor, you kind of engage more with pictures of things. You'd probably buy like normally a book or something to go, oh, that looks like a nice place, I'll go there, right? So they've actually worked out what it is that you're most likely to want, and also added some ratings so you know those are probably the best places to go. And then it took it one step further. I didn't even want to know what the map was or how many people live there, but that's all kind of extra information. And it means I didn't have to then go and do more research somewhere else. I didn't have to type another query in, go off somewhere else. It was all done in one query. The last one, I'm also a manager as well, and we've been doing some management training. And we had to do how to delegate effectively, right? But they said, look for videos. So I knew that this particular, by adding videos as the noun to the end, or however you want to call it, would return me videos. The videos are the things I wanted. I didn't want documents and PDF files and things like that. I wanted videos. So kindly enough, it said, well, here's the most two used videos right at the top, but here's another selection. So rather than you having to browse down each one, I'm going to show you the rest. And it also shows me how long it is. So maybe I've only got 5 minutes to watch a video in my time during the day, so I know which one that I want to watch. So it's added additional information to the search result. Right? So it's making intelligent decisions. So it's saying, basically it's interpreting what I intended to discover, right? So it's reading what I typed in and went, was you looking for those words, or was you actually looking for something very specific? It formatted them based on the type of content. So videos were formatted with videos, but it also worked out that, well, actually, if you're searching for places, they're better off as images. It promoted content so that this is the result of converting one New Zealand dollar. This is the thing you want, and that's a promoted result. And the last is they're all in-place answers. So I haven't had to go off somewhere else, click through to another page to discover something. So I'm using search as my one-stop shop for everything. I don't have to go off to other places. So just a quick question. Do you think you could do that in SharePoint? There's a few nods, good, good. Yes, you can. And I'm gonna hopefully show you over the next hour at rapid pace how you can actually do this. So we're actually gonna go through a couple of key themes here. One is query rules, right? So I'm gonna focus half of this session on query rules, or maybe 30%, and then the other half on display templates, right? They give us the ability to do effectively what you just saw. I'm also gonna show you a bit of debugging, right? Now, you tend to have to do this by debugging, so it's very important to know how. And then last of all, I'm just gonna give some advice around deploying this stuff out, right? But they're really like, if we get to it, I'll show you more. But if we don't get around to it, then there'll be less towards those debugging and deployment. So let's start where this all starts. So it starts with this query box, right? Now, there's things you can do with a query box. You can actually put in pre-configured searches and say, if somebody starts typing this word in, start suggesting these other things they might want to search for, right? Which is what you see on normal search engines. Over time, SharePoint actually records what people search for and does it by itself. Right? But when you first deploy SharePoint, it doesn't know what people have commonly searched for, so this box is generally empty as people start typing in. Now, once you've done that search, the next step that it does is it runs the query rules. Now, if you were using 2010, at this point, that search box would have suddenly returned you a bunch of XML, and you've got to write a fantastic XSLT script. Does anyone like those XSLT scripts? Fans of those? No? So all of your business decisions and business rules and everything else was all in that XSLT script, right? You may have called out some JavaScript and other things, but that was painful to write in XSLT as well. Right? So you couldn't really control, and it was always in the hands of the developer. Right? There was no way for the search administrator to go and write some XSLT to change the way content displayed or decide what content to display in different orders. But you did get some promoted results and some other things, but they were just best bets. Now what happens is the query rules actually go off to the index and they then do based on what is in the query rule, they pull back content from the index, right? So they're actually sitting between you and the index of the results before you start formatting them. And it then works out what different types of results you've got. So it's a Word document, it's PowerPoint, it's a whatever. And attached to those are what we call display templates, right? So it's gonna say, if it's a PowerPoint that's come back, use this display template and display it in this way, right? And that can be based on content types and all sorts of other rules. The result is in a couple of places. One is in search results, right? So these rules and the templates and everything affect your search result page, right? But it doesn't matter where that is. You can use the core search result anywhere you like in your site. And you can have these same rules apply, right? The rules are actually defined can be defined in the search service centrally. You can define them in a site collection, and you can even define them in a subsite. So depending on what your needs are and who's managing that site depends on where you do it. So maybe the search administration center, but your main search center, there's one administrator that looks after that and defines the rules, but maybe in other sites, the site collection owner defines the rules that are suitable for that site. So the sales team might define their own rules because it makes sense to boost things based on content that's related to sales. Right? The other thing that it affects is the content search web part, right, which is part of the enterprise version of SharePoint. The content search web part also uses these query rules. And the content search web part just enables you to predefine a query, put it on a page, and it will display top results, top queries, things you queried last week, a whole bunch of other things. Right? Does anyone play with those, the search query web part? So I'm not going to show the search query web part today. I'm going to focus on the search center because it will just take me too long to show both, but the same thing applies. Now, it also affects the REST API, right? So James Whitaker talked about the fact that why should he go off to a search engine and do a search? And I thought, that's fantastic. That was just what I was going to show everyone what to do. So actually, the key thing to hear is this REST API that they added along the bottom here to SharePoint 2013. So if you've got another application, right, that you've built, so you could write an app for Outlook, and the app in Outlook could run a query against SharePoint search, and all the query rules and everything would apply to the results that come back, and then you could display something inside an app inside of Outlook, or Word, or wherever it might be, right? So you can use all of this. query rule type stuff to be able to change the results that come back. You can't, of course, the app yourself, you're then going to define your own display templates, so the display templates don't apply in this case. Right? But just think of that's another option to leverage this capability. So let's talk about query rules. There are four altogether, different types. There's better best bets, as we call it. Right? So it's like best bets, but it's the, anyone use FAST in 2010? Yeah, a couple of people. So it's basically the best bets piece of the FAST search engine that came with 2010. And I'm going to show you how to create some really nice best bets and talk about other options. You can create user-orientated queries, right? So you can basically say, I know who you are, so I'm going to make some changes to the query based on things I know about you. Right? I might know what your interests are based on your profile. Right? So you might pull those through and change the query based on that information. You can pick up intent rules, so that's like the what did the person actually intend to search for rather than just searching for the words. And then the last one is what I call natural language query. Now, this isn't quite the same as if you, there was a SQL Server session on a couple of days ago around BI, and they talked about how they can do natural language recognition when you do a query. It's not the same as that. The natural language querying is more using regex to actually recognize what people are typing in and then making a decision on that basis, right? So it's not actually recognizing language. It's you saying, if people type these phrases, this is what I want to recognize. So I'm just going to show you how this all works and do a quick demo of the search center. So if I'm just going to do an example in here. So if I go to XT1000 slides, first of all, there's a bunch of rules that are out of the box that you just get. Right? You don't have to do anything. They're built in. And one of them is recognizing potential content that SharePoint might have. So one of them is slides. So you type slides, it's going to find PowerPoint presentations. If you type documents, it's going to find Word documents, right, and possibly PDF files. Right? So it's actually got a few built in. And you've got things like sites and a whole bunch of other ones as well. Right? Now, the way you can see where these are is you go to site settings, and then you go to query rules, which are just down here. Now, you can also see there was query rules under manage site as well, so that's where you can configure just this site rather than the whole site collection. Now, the first thing is you need to define the source or select the source. So these are the sources. If you used 2010, these are the same as scopes, right? But you can do a lot more with the result sources than you could with scopes. Now, there's three tabs in search results. There's the everything, the people, conversations, and videos, right? They roughly translate to the conversation system, the local SharePoint results, people results, and the local video results, right? So those are already defined. The other ones you'd use in other places. So popular, right, enables you to add the content search web part to the page, and then you could change what happens in terms of popularity. Maybe you rank it slightly differently in terms of popularity. So in this case, I'm just going to pick the local SharePoint results because that's one that's most important. And this actually does a refresh when you first put it in. And you see all of the rules. Now, I've got a few here I've already put in that I'm going to show you later on that are ones I've defined, right, in the site collection. Then you have all these other ones. Now, if you're trying to work out how these query rules work, the best thing to do is look at these ones because you can actually view them and see what they do. So you can actually go, oh, how is that matching? For instance, look at this one with the telephone number. That is that regex actually is like a couple of lines long and wraps around. Right? So you really need to know your regex to find a telephone number. But it means if you type a telephone number into SharePoint, it will find a person with that telephone number. It recognizes it was the telephone number you typed in. Right? As you scroll down the page, you actually see it recognizes blogs. So if you type blog or blogs, and then if we carry on down, we'll find the PowerPoint one, which also recognizes a whole bunch of other words, as well as slides. Right? So if you're interested to work out how Microsoft did it, follow all those ones. Now, if you want to create your own query rule, just go new query rule after you've selected your source. Now, what I'm going to do here is create a new best bet. Right? Now, just as an example, right? The marketing team want to make sure people are using the latest prices when people go to sell products. If someone does a search for a product in the site, like I just did, like the XT1000 is a product kind of definition in the site. Maybe the marketing team want to promote the fact that prices have been updated recently and you need to actually read the new pricing module, right? I'm just going to create this price change best bet in here to actually create a promoted result at the top. Now, I have different ways of recognizing it. Now, all I'm doing at this point is recognizing words that people have typed in. Can everyone read that? I'll zoom in. That helps. Now, one of them is just straight matches on keywords that a person typed in. And you just type in all of the keywords and the semicolon and delimit them. So did they type this word, or this word? Right? Then you've got contains an action term. So that's an intent. Right? So an action term will be the slides, sites, maybe customers, products. You know, you could come up with other ones that are of interest to your company. You can also match on a dictionary. So rather than having to maintain that list inside of the query rule, and people have to go in and add extra ones if new products come on board, for instance, you can actually get it to use the term store. So if you've got all your products listed in the term store, you can say grab the term store of products into here, and then if you find a match based on that, then this rule applies. Okay. The other ones start to get more complicated. So I can go, if the query this person typed in, they normally use the video tab when they type in this type of query, then apply this rule, which means I might go and just grab all the video content and boost that into the search results, right? So it might be if someone says training material and people normally type that in the video tab, then I can say bring back video, because that's something common. Also, if somebody clicks on a particular result type, so if whenever they do a search that contains these words, they always click on products, then why don't I just boost products in the first place, then they won't have to page through each search result to try and find what they were looking for. And then the last one is some more advanced query matching, right? So in here, I get the choice of writing a regular expression. Anyone good regular expression writers? I can't say I'm really good at regular expressions. You want to get a tool to possibly help you with that, or a developer, as I try to. Then you can also have whole phrases. So rather than just individual words, a whole phrase. In this case, I'm just going to put in if they type XT1000 or XT2000, 2000, or maybe they type product, something along those lines, right? And then you get a choice of how you want to match it. So you're going to match, they have to type that exact thing, right? So it's the entire query is going to match. Or do I just want to say where it starts with, or maybe where it ends with? You can't untick the first one until you tick one of the other two, by the way. It's like a radio toggle box. So I can say, I don't care where they've put those words in, like at the start or the end. Unfortunately, there's no such thing as contains. So if you want to do a contains, then you have to write a regex, because then you'll have to do like anything in the beginning and anything at the end, but just find this word. And then you can achieve a contains. Right? But this is the most simplest one. Now, the next two, depending on what type of query I'm doing, I can either match the whole lot to a variable called subject terms. Now, the reason it's doing that is I can then use subject terms elsewhere. So if you've ever used the query builder in here, you can actually go in and say where the content matches subject terms. It's like whatever they typed in the search box. If you match on an action term, you can tell it to put the action terms in the action term variable and the search terms in the search term variable and then do different things with those. So you can say query based on the search terms but match the action term to some other managed metadata property or something else about the content. Right? So you can choose how you want it to split up those different references. You can also add alternate conditions at this point. I'm not going to, but you can add multiples. So does it match based on this, or on this, or on this? And you can keep going for quite a few, but don't get too complicated. Right? Probably three is about manageable in terms of alternates, because you're just going to do an or. Right? So it's not going to do this and this and this. It's going to be this or this. Then I get the option of how I want to do it. So I'm just going to add a promoted result here. So we're doing the better best bet, right? And in this case, it's I'm going to call this price change as well. It doesn't really matter. It's the hover that you get. And what I've done here is I've just uploaded a HTML page into a document library in the marketing site. So I'm just going to paste the link to that piece of content. You'll see what it looks like in a minute. Now I can choose to either render this as just a URL. So that's the old 2010 style. It's just a link to that piece of content, right? Or you can tell it you want to render the URL as a banner. And effectively what it's doing is taking that HTML and putting it in an iframe. Gotta love iframes in 2013. Iframes everywhere, but this is an iframe, right? I'm just going to save that and keep talking while I'm saving it because it takes, well, that was quick. Right? And I can also add more promoted results. So add this one and also show this one and this one. Kind of keep going, right? Now, the other thing I can do with these is change when they're published. So maybe this price change only applies between these dates, right? Or maybe actually I'm doing a little competition internally, and if you happen to use our new search engine and happen to type in Easter egg, then I show you a nice little picture of an Easter egg, and you click on it, and it says you've won a prize for using our new search engine. But that only applies for the first month of launch of our new intranet, right? So it's kind of a way of getting people engaged, right? The last one you can do here is put a review date. So maybe you want to review these rules over time because you need to make sure they're fresh and current. You know, they might not apply. Maybe some management data has changed over time. Now, once it's added it, it'll actually add it to the top, and you'll see it defined for this site collection. Right? If I now go back to the search page, I'm going to find the quickest way in there. So we've got XT1000 slides. Now, it's going to match on that XT1000. Hey, first demo worked. This is a good start. If you do that and it doesn't turn up, it just takes a while to process the query rule sometimes, so don't panic. It'll probably turn up eventually, right? Now, if you want it to click off somewhere, you have to build that in the HTML, right? So my HTML has just got an anchor tag with an image in it, right? It's not really sophisticated, right? But the I was discussing with a colleague other options that we could do with this. And one of the challenges we have with Yammer is that that doesn't integrate its search with SharePoint. But actually, they're just conversations. The conversations in here go to discussions. Right? They just show discussions, not stuff from Yammer. But what you can do is, we started and didn't get finished before to demo it to you, but you could write the HTML page to grab the query string, send it off to Yammer, and then display it as a promoted result. Right, in the top of conversations. Right, there's a couple of examples, and I've put them in the end here about how you can build the little Yammer bit if you want to try it yourself. Right, and then you get the mixed search results. So you see Yammer, and then you see the conversations underneath, or however you want to sort it with the other content. So that's just another use for it, right, as a promoted result. The other thing you can do if that query isn't turning up and you can't work out why, you can also... there's this query rule tester. So you can just type the query in here, and it will show you which rules apply to that query. Right? So if you're finding it's not turning up and you're expecting it to, then just type the word in here, and then you'll find out why it might not be appearing. Right, so that's like 101 query rules, right? The most basic one as well. So let's just divide that up. So when somebody searches, essentially you can match on keywords. You can do something from a dictionary, so imagine marketing and sales are in part of the term store. You can do the action terms, which could be at the end or at the beginning, or you can use a regular expression and just match the whole thing, right? So where it starts with and where it ends with. And I've got an example in here I'll show you. In terms of what you can do in affecting the way the results are displayed, you can use actions, use promoted results, and that could be in a hyperlink or in this case it's an image. You can display a block. So I'm going to show the next one is a result block. Right? So I'm saying display this block of results to the user. Right? So basically you're doing another query, pulling back content from a secondary query, and then displaying that as the top result. And the last one you can do is promoting or demoting, depending on what you feel like. So what you can do is actually say, if they type this word in, I just want to change the ranking order of content, so that some stuff starts to filter towards the top, but I don't want to make it appear just at the top. I want it to like still be streamed in with everything else, but maybe it's a bit more highly ranked. And you can also change the sort order in that way as well. So if they've typed these words in, change the whole sort order of the search result. And then there's the publishing scenario with the dates, right? You can also use, so I'm going to get into the next one and show how we can change the query that gets run and promote a set of results. But you can also not only use things that the person typed in, you can also use query variables. Right? Now, query variables enable you to grab, say, if it was this site that we're doing a search in, then apply this behavior. If you're using the product catalog, this is where the URL tokens come into play, because it takes the URL and by the slashes in the URL, it divides it up, and they become tokens. I'm not going to show that one today. The one I like, particularly in the user one here, is this bottom one, where it actually, this whole OWS tax ID metadata tag all tags info, is basically all the meta tags against an item are compiled into one managed metadata property, right? And that managed metadata property is the same as the one when you go into your profile and you add interests. So when you go in and add an interest and type it in, it's looking at that same managed metadata set effectively. So this little query here, you could write something to say, show everything that you're interested in. Right? Now you could do that just with a content search web part and just dump it on the page and put that query in. And you could have it on your home page and say, hey, here's all the new content you're interested in. And it will just be matching up based on metadata tags that people typed in. Right, now we're going to go back into the site, and we're just going to do a huge bunch of demo of a bunch of other stuff, right? So rather than jump in and out, I'm going to demo a number of different scenarios. So one is using a user-centric rule. Then I'm going to show another one which acting on what the user intended. And then last of all, I'm going to show you this kind of detecting natural language and what that concept looked like. So, flip back over. Cool. So this one, I'm going to show you. I didn't want to run a query. I'm just trying to save time here by not clicking the query and you sit there for a second. This one actually says shows things that I actually authored, right? So what I'm saying is, if you've typed in my presentations, my stuff, things I own, you know, words like that. I mean, how many times have you wanted to work out, oh, where did I put that document? I authored it somewhere. You could put author colon and write your name in, but how many people know that? Most people go, oh, where's my presentation? Right? So you're just going, hey, they type the word my. And then at the top, it says content you authored relating to presentations. But it's showing two sets of results. The top one is things you authored. The second one is just because it matched on the word PowerPoint and was looking for the word my, which really wasn't what I intended, was it? Right? I didn't intend to find everything that contained the word my. I mean, that was great that it came back with my logo and my talk, but that wasn't my stuff. That's not what I intended when I actually ran the query. And the way this one works is my stuff, right? Is all I've called it in here. And so my stuff just uses a action term to match on my or own. You could probably come up with other phrases that people might type in, right? But in this case, I'm going to use a result block, right? Now, one thing that's I might point out that's pretty cool about this result block thing is at the top there, you can see the variable names that it's passing in, right? And you see it says subject terms, and it says the unmatched query terms, so things that didn't work. It's not going to pass in the my and the own, right? Then it's saying action terms, and it's, in fact, even being intelligent enough to say, oh, this would be, in your case, my. And if you do it in other ways, in other terms, you'll actually see it comes up and tells you what the variables will be in examples. It's absolutely fantastic. Someone actually thought about it. Then you can change what the title of that block is. So you saw it says content related to you, and you can dump in any of those variables as part of that. And then we get around to our query. So this is a really simple query. You can just type it in this box if you want to. But you can also just launch the whole query builder and create any query you like, right? So you can just run a completely different query from what the person typed in. In this case, I'm actually saying author equals user.name, and it's actually run the search result. Now, in this session, I've not got time to take you through this whole query builder, right? So you'll have to go away and do some research yourself on the query builder, right? But just to say that, if I wanted to, I can select the property. So all I did was author, and I did where that is equal to, and then on the drop down here, you can see, if I just zoom in for you, you can see subject terms and action terms. So I can say, I mean, there's no point in matching up to author is my, right? But in this case, I can also grab the user variable as well, which is what I've actually done. But if you wanted to modify the query to match on the action term someone typed in, then you can see it also gives the example there as well. So that means you'll be matching on my, right? So it's pretty pretty clever. And I can change the sorting and that sort of thing in here. So again, change the sort order or the ranking, so I don't necessarily have to use the ranking model one. And if you wanted to test that query, you can then just go in here and run the query. Now you notice also I put in my username as me. I'm Garth today in this particular demo. But I could change that username to someone else. So if I wanted to test this query, what would it be like if somebody else did this query? What results would they get? And just check that that works. So very simple. That's that one. I wanted to show you another one where I've actually changed the way it looks. So this example is actually based on a customer actually asked for this. He's sitting in the back, actually. They've got like 150 odd templates. And we thought, like Word documents, PowerPoint templates, all that sort of stuff. And what would be a good way for people to be able to discover those templates? And search actually is quite a useful tool to be able to find content because it gives this refinement panel. So we could tag templates up based on what area of the business they related to, maybe what the company name was and things like that. So they could search, find templates, as long as they use the word templates somewhere in the query, they can say marketing templates, templates for this company name, all sorts of combinations. And then we wanted to do something nice with the results. And this is the second part of the presentation we'll cover how I've done this, which is actually to display the thumbnail of the actual document and then still have the hover panel turn up and show the actual content, but then nicely lay it out as you would in Word. So if you go into Word and go new document, you get these like bubbles showing you the Word templates. And we thought, well, let's just take that, you know, because that's obviously working, and let's just apply that to search results. So now if you type templates in, you get this pop-up. Right? Now, you could add additional metadata at the bottom so they can actually identify it, because of course, obviously, my meta tag of title is really not very useful. So you might add extra metadata and things like that into that result. Now, that one's pretty simple as well. That one we just did, company templates, I just said where it's a template. But the interesting thing I wanted to show you here is how you can change the way that looks. So if we go to edit the query result, at the bottom here under settings, I can say what template to use. And I'm going to show you this template later. But these are all the templates that you get. So remember I said we take the results, and you get result types, and you apply a display template. These are all the display templates. So one way I can change how this displays is say, when you run this query, use the Word template item template I created to change the way that looks. And then we get that nice layout of it being side by side and under each other. Right? But you can see in here, there's like if it's a PDF or OneNote or PowerPoint, and all the others are listed in there as well. So this is just one way you can change it. You can, so that's going to override the match between the result type and the display template. So there's another place in SharePoint to go, if it's this result type, use this template, which you can force it to do that across all of the result types. So this is overriding that. I'm saying don't use the Word display, which is what it would do. Right, I want you to use my nice little Word template for the items. Now the last one I wanted to show you is this natural query language before we move on. And in this case, where's it gone? I want to find top data. So it's part of this demo, and I've actually got it right at the back in the resources about the different articles I use to build this up. I tend to like work based on a sort of plagiarism type approach in some cases and then add my own feel to it. But in here, what I've done is I've indexed the Northwind database of customers and orders, right? So if you've got a database of data that you want to be able to create a really nice query capability over the top, then one option for you is to use the business connectivity services, index the data, and then use SharePoint search as a way of actually displaying that data really nicely and use refinements and all sorts of other things. which is where we're going to get to in our second part of this talk. So in this case, I'm matching on this very wonderful string. Probably easier if I show you what it looks like in here. Anyone see that? That's my very bad regex on this particular line. So I'm basically saying from the word top. So someone's going to type top customers in and in some location, right? So I'm saying match that as a string, right? You have to get this very precise, right? In my particular case, in this example, but there's people that can write much better regex than I can and could get it to match in all sorts of scenarios. And what you do is you'd kind of, the same way that Google and Bing has been teaching us how to write convert one NZD to two US dollars, you do the same with your users and you go, well, you type top or bottom customers in some location or top products or whatever it might be, then this is the set of results you can get from our search results. So it's kind of, you just got to do a bit of training for your users on, you know, ways to make your search engine give them really good results. Now, in this particular case, so I'm going to say if it matches that regex, I want to actually mess around with the ranking order of the query. And I also want to change where it's going to get the content from at the same time. So I'm actually, this little thing here just says where the content source is, the Northwind data. The path just stops it showing some other random stuff from the results. And I'm going to say where the country is equal to the location you typed in. And then I'm simply going to change the sort order by how many orders they've placed and the value of those orders, and then put those to the top. That's so we can, our top customers are the people that order the most stuff from us and pay the most for it, right? You might have some other better ranking model than that, but that's just the one I've used here. And then again, if I wanted to test this, you can see there's no results because I haven't got a location. So I put in USA, and I can see I come back with some results. Cool, right? So all I'm doing here is changing, I'm going to change the ranking order and change what types of content people see. And that's this tab here. So all I've done is I type in top customers in the USA. I've actually created a specific view for this, and I'll show you how to put it together. And I've got this displaying really nicely for the sales guys because they like to have it all nicely laid out and a nice little contact card and everything else. And I've also included a nice little pie chart. So if there was more than one country, it would show that split up across different countries. So I kind of got a bit of BI sort of going on in here, right? Sort of crossover between potentially Power BI and SharePoint search capability, right? Because I'm including like graphs and I'm actually giving them the capability to sort of analyze that data, right, in some very basic form. So if you notice common queries that people type that want this sort of result, then you could build those into your search. The other thing I've done here that I'm going to show you next is I've changed the hover panel so it actually shows where the location is and it brings up a little Bing map. And that's the second part of this presentation. So that concludes our very fast demo on query rules. So you basically create query rules, say if they type in these values, this text, then I'm going to basically change the query, re-rank the query, do all sorts of things. And then I've got those three options. I can do a best bet, I can do a promoted set of results, so I'm actually pulling them up to the top of the results, or I'm actually going to say change all the ranking orders or sorting order of the content, depending on how you want to do it. Right, let's move on to display templates. So now we've got the stuff we want, the user's getting the right results, now we need to make it look good, right? So they actually apply in different places, so search results, as you've just seen, right? But you only write them once, so you write your display template and it applies everywhere, right? So you don't need to, like the old XSLT, you'd have to have it in the web part defined there, so you don't have to do that anymore. It also applies not just to the search result, it also applies to the refiners. So they use display templates as well, right? And the last thing is you can use this to do customizations. And what I mean is that you can use it to call out to other services. So in my case, I'm calling out to the Bing map, but maybe in the hover panel, you call out to something else in SharePoint using a REST call, using JavaScript, and then pull back some other information. So you can do not only pull back managed properties, you can use it to go outside of the search result itself. And my recommendation here is do it because you're trying to improve the usability. I mean, it's great to be able to just change the whole way it looks, but kind of do some research first of all around why do you need to make this look better than the out-of-the-box PowerPoint item view, right? If it's, because it takes quite a while to do. You'll realize when I get into this kind of how potentially hard this is. I made a few mistakes along the way and wasted several hours of my life trying to get it to work. So, you know, do it because there's a really good reason to do it, not just because you think it looked cool to show a map, right, if they don't need a map. So part of the example I'm going to take you through is this. So if you did, before I changed all that view to make that nice little contact card, it looked like this. This is the out-of-the-box BCS search result view. The title and the link to the profile page. And the profile page doesn't look very nice either. But the user has to actually click on that to go to the profile page to view all that information that I showed in the search result. So I just wasted their time clicking on that entry to go and find the same information I could show them in the search result. So it's about making it look a lot better. So in this case, kind of a rich type of view. So I actually provide more information to them and then include like a map or something along those lines, depending on what you need. Now that could also, if you've got CRM, right, in the background, maybe when they view that there, it pops off the CRM and shows them all of the latest opportunities out of CRM in the hover panel. And then they click on the link in the hover panel and go to the CRM opportunity, right? So it enables you to connect all these systems together. Now you can also do these graphics refiners. So you, I'm going to show you how to apply some of these, but I don't know if you've seen it. If you do a search at the moment and it happens to be a date, you can get it to appear like a nice graph. Right? So this is an out-of-the-box thing. But you can also take, in my case, what I've done with countries, is there somebody nicely written a pie chart refiner, and I'm just going to show you how to add that in. But it actually takes all of those values and then says, oh, over a pie chart, this is kind of how they split across countries in terms of the search results. Maybe you're doing a search across projects, and you've got different project statuses, and you go, well, you know, how many are in complete, and how many are waiting and sign off, or whatever it might be. So there's various different ways you could look at this. All right. Now, just to break up the search result and how these item templates apply, right, first of all, you've got what are called control templates. So these are larger chunks on the page, right? And we're not going to get in control templates because then you're really, really customizing the whole look and feel of the results. We're more focused on item templates today. But actually, that search box up the top is actually an item template in itself. So from a customization perspective, you change the item template and you can change the search box. So you've got the refiners as one piece that you can adjust, and there's different templates for those. You've then got the group template, right? So that promoted result, there's a group template that says how to show promoted results, right? So you could change how your group template looks for your particular results set if you needed to display that in a different way. Then you've got the individual item templates, right? So one of those is for video, and the other one's for a Word document. I don't know why they didn't add the preview for the Word document, because it does it, because they used it in the Word template example. But they chose not to, and it just does it for videos and presentations. And then, of course, you've got the hover panel. Now, that's an item template as well. Okay. So there's multiple places. There's the individual items, the refiners, and this hover panel. So I'm just going to go in and show you how this works. And then show you quickly through some examples. So it's going to take me. So all the item templates are stored in the master pages and page layouts, right? So the best way to do this is go to them, your site settings, and go master pages, page layouts, and then open it Explorer View or map a drive to it, right? And do it that way. So what you'll find is once you map the drive to the master page library, you can go and display templates, and you'll find that there's ones for filters, ones for the content search where parts are slightly different, and then ones for search. And then the place to start is with the default. So you take item_default.html. Oh, sorry. Oh, that would help, wouldn't it? There you go. So, sorry about that. So I started here. So master page, so I've just mapped my Z drive to the master pages library, right? And then we've got display templates. And so as I said, there's search, filters, and content search web parts, right? So there's different templates in each. So if we go into search, I can then, down here you can see there's various templates for all the different types, so discussions, Excel, etc. So what you do is you copy the HTML one, start with the default, or start with one that's close to the one you want. Now you'll also see in here that there's a JS file. So what you do is you only work with the you only work with the HTML files, not with the JavaScript files. Now, once you get expert at this, you may just work in the JavaScript files and not in the HTML files, but don't do both. Right? Either do the HTML files or do the JavaScript files, because every time you update the HTML file, it overwrites the JavaScript file. Right? Now, once you've got your HTML file, the first thing to do is to rename it to something that's sensible. So, this is my demo 2 HTML file. And because I'm actually working, I've actually got this whole environment running in Azure, so it's going all the way over to Singapore and back, in case you're wondering why it's a bit slow. I'm just going to open this in Notepad so you can see what this looks like. So the first thing to do here, give it your own title. The second thing, change this thing here. I mean, it looks innocuous. It's a div tag. But actually, it takes that div tag and puts it in the JavaScript file as a reference. Right? So if you don't change it, it creates the JavaScript file with the wrong reference, and you can never change it. I couldn't work out why my template wasn't working for ages, and I saw this was incorrect. So you have to delete it and restart again. So change this one straight away. Right? So you have to call this the same as the file name. Right? Very bad kind of programming example, but that's what you have to do. You then got in this file a description, so give it a nice description, result demo item. And then you got your managed properties. Now, I'm not going to get into the whole managed property side of SharePoint, but basically you get the crawl properties, you can create managed properties of those. Those are the ones you display here. Right? And they're actually divided up. I'll explain how they come through in here, but you basically reference each one you want to show in your template. And it then tells you whether it succeeded or not in terms of translating. Now, the next thing you'll see is all my JavaScript code is commented out, which makes this rather difficult to program because you actually can't use IntelliSense. There's no point in opening this in Visual Studio because it is all comments. Right? So it does make it difficult sometimes to work with it. So I would look at the previous templates already created, like the default, the Word, and all the others, and use those as examples of how you want to actually create your template. Right? Because there's no documentation about how all this stuff works. The context, that CTX you can see in various places, that's documented, but the rest of it isn't. Okay? So have a look for a previous one. You'll find things like the hover URL, right, which is the one that's going to pop up, and there's some things that create what that actual link will be when you hover it. The last one you can see, once I get into HTML, something else happens. Because now my HTML is not in the comment tags. And it puts, if you want to reference a variable, you have to use this underscore hash equals, right, to be able to actually bring that content in. Then you say what the variable is. Right? Now, when it translates all of that, it actually swaps it around the other way. Right? Oh, by the way, the render body, what that does is it just takes the default rendering for a piece of content, right? Whatever that default is. So what you would do is, if you're running your own custom one, is you take out that render body and you put your own in. Right? So in this case, in my item verb template HTML, right, I'm actually doing a couple of other things. One is I'm actually getting the whether I should use the WAC URL, so i.e. the preview URL or the actual URL to the item. And then you can get the actual path to the to open it up in the browser rather than always it'll open up in a full window. The other thing I can do here is things like change the icon. So these ones are all documented, the CSR icon, what app it should open in, is all in the documentation. Then the other thing I do is I actually grab the preview URL. So remember in my Word template, it actually shows a little preview of the Word documents. So you have to use this to grab the preview URL. And then last of all, I actually cheated and I grabbed the video template. If you remember the video, if you've used the video one, it's side by side. All it's doing is it's like a div float and then it just comes up underneath. So that was my display template, very simple, and I just clear at the end to after every three rows to show how that looks. Now the other one I wanted to show you was this item company template. So this is the one that's making that nice contact card, right? Very exactly the same up the top, but you now see I'm pulling in things like organization names, contact titles, customer ID, and a whole bunch of other managed metadata properties. I've also changed my hover panel. This is now using item company hover panel body.js instead. And then I just simply grab all of these variables, so street address and title and etc., and then making my nice display template. Not the best display template I've created, but it's a reasonably nice display template. Right? Now out of that, I get this JavaScript file. Right? Now you don't need to create this JavaScript file. SharePoint just does the JavaScript file for you. Right? And you will actually see in here things like the managed properties, so those variables that are at the top are translated. Now when you get down into the file, it does this strange thing where it takes your any HTML you've typed, and that becomes in this msouter.push thing that's creating basically a concatted string back into your back into the output. And then it adds all your JavaScript code you can actually now see properly, right, as to what the JavaScript code will look like. So everything gets translated around the other way. So if you want to check what happened, then you can look in the JavaScript file and see if there was any issues. So if you've done the HTML file wrong, like you've not got the tags right, you'll actually see in this file it'll actually have an error message. And it will tell you what line the error message is on, which is really useful. So that's item templates in kind of a nutshell. So there's a HTML file and there's a JavaScript file. But my recommendation is not to play around with the JavaScript files unless you're a real expert at it. Just use the HTML files. Okay. So display templates, that HTML and JavaScript, you don't have to run any XSL. I'm quite happy about that. My days of XSL running are over. It does one result at a time. So those item templates, you're only affecting one item. Right? If you need to affect multiple items, then you need to use a group template. And there's some examples now on GitHub where they've actually made it look like a table result. So actually, you can, if anyone's been asked, can we have an address book? Can you make it look like a table? Now you can, right? So you can use a group template and an item template to write a table out with rows. And then, of course, there's refiners and other controls that you can do as well. Just to cap off how this syntax works, so basically there's your JavaScript code goes between those top tags, right? If you get it wrong, then you end up with the result file will have an error in it. Your HTML is then outside of those, but if you want to use any variables, you have to use this underscore hash equals and then put your variable name in it. Right? Once you've done it a few times, it becomes a lot easier. You need to get your head around it first of all. What I wouldn't recommend, though, is writing large chunks of JavaScript code in these files. Right? So if you need to actually write something complicated, so like that pie chart refiner on that other one, I would actually put that in a separate JavaScript file and then reference it to include it inside of your item template. Then you can test that separate JavaScript file entirely on its own. Right? You can check whether the code's showing up correctly based on passing in parameters, rather than trying to debug in commented code inside of your item template. Very difficult. Those managed properties, the way you add those is basically it has the whatever you want to display it as, right, or slot name, and then what the managed property name is, and then you just have them colon and then a comma and then colon and then a comma and keep going. Now, if you're using a content search web part, something slightly different happens, because when you edit a content search web part, it lists these slot name, display names, and you can say what managed metadata properties you want to use to fill that in. So you can override the one in the file. So it's slightly different if you're using the content search web part. It gives you a bit more flexibility from an end user perspective. So CTX, do some research on this. I just put a bunch of ones in here as examples. But so you can override, you can just do some basic things and change the icon and some other stuff about the file and still just use the render body and it would just come out as you need it, sort of laid out the same way. So only overwrite the render body if you really want to change the whole look and feel of that result. Now, we talked about these, how you want to, the controls, the groups, and the item templates. Just be careful with a content search web part, you can specify the group template and the item template. In search results, you can only specify the item template, right? You have to actually export the web part and change the XML to tell it what group template to use. So it gets slightly more complicated, right? So only, again, do that if you really need to. So you can do some clever ways of being able to display that without having to. So my thing, just using some divs and just floating them around, I created a concept of if it was a group template without actually having to change that group template. Now, the last one I wanted to just quickly show you then that I didn't go through in that whole demo because I realized we've got like 4 minutes or so, is in this is how to do some debugging. Now, when you actually load the page the first time, what you'll find is that some of your JavaScript may not be loaded straight away. So your hover panel JavaScript only loads when you hover over an item, right? So if you use the F12 debugger and you're going to go into view all of the JavaScript, anyone see that in there? You may find that your hover panel item doesn't actually display until you've actually gone into it. So if I go into my little item hover panel, then I see all the JavaScript that I'd created through through the HTML displayed in here. And if I want to, I can then add breakpoints and then hover over the item again, and then we'll have to refresh the page first, and it'll actually drop into that JavaScript. So that's how you can debug it. So all of the item templates are loaded in the web browser, and you debug it through just your preferred web browser debugger tool. Right, you don't that you can't like hook into it with Visual Studio or anything else. You've got to kind of use whatever tools are built into the web browser. This particular example, I ended up just using the Bing REST API to just call in the map, and it just brings back the image, and then I'm just displaying it in the page. So very simple, just grabbing those properties out of the page. So debugging wise, learn how to use F12. Is my recommendation in that basis. But at least you can actually get through to the code and be able to step through it and see what it's doing. Okay. So we've just got a few minutes left, so I just want to just talk about deployment finally. So how do you get this into production? Well, the display templates, you can package them in the Design Manager. So if you've used the Design Manager tool in 2013, you can say, export my design. And because they're just in the master page library, it'll grab those and put them in a design package. Right? But you can also, and with that, you can say, include the search configuration. So it'll grab all your query rules and result types and all that sort of stuff as well. But we've found with deploying Design Manager, it doesn't always work consistently. Right? So only use that maybe for trialing it, but not when you're actually deploying it into production necessarily. You can separately just import and export the query rules. So if you need to export them out of it, so you control this out in the site collection, create query rules in the site collection, and you go, yeah, they're the ones we want to use for the rest of the company. Export them from that site collection and import them into the search service, like the central search service. Okay. So what we would suggest you do is you actually package up the files and deploy them that way into your environment. Now, whether you use the sandbox or you actually just write some PowerShell script to shove the JavaScript files in. Now, why I say the JavaScript files are not the HTML files is that we've also found that when you deploy the HTML files, the event handler doesn't always fire and create the JavaScript file for you. So you might think you've deployed it and it actually nothing's happened. And then you have to go in and edit every HTML file to force it to create the JavaScript file, right, which is not ideal. So if you move into production, then just grab the JavaScript files and deploy those. I don't use the HTML files. I'm not going to get time to do that deployment. So just some things to close out then. Then definitely from a display template, so try and get your head. The best way is to look at previous display templates. So find an item display template that looks like one you want to use, and then do simple changes. So if it's like a Word one, just add a new managed property and add it into the page. So do like really small things one step at a time, right? Don't try and customize the whole thing like I have with that contact card straight away, right? In fact, when I started with a contact card, I pasted the HTML in that one of our designers gave me, and then I just added one property at a time rather than dumping the whole lot in, right? Because otherwise you might get come across other issues. Have a look at the query rules that come out of the box, and then just play around with other ones yourself. Because you can do it in a subsite, just add a core search result web part to your site and just play around with the query rules. You just have to be site owner to do it at that level, right? You don't have to be site collection administrator. If you're going to get really sophisticated with those JavaScripts, again, put the JavaScript file outside of the template, right? But then, you know, definitely learn how to use the debugging tools in whatever your favorite browser is, right? Which is the way to go. And then last of all, don't do it just because you can. I know you can make your search results look fantastic, but make sure that you've talked to the users about what they really need. Don't just create like natural language things matching up because you thought it was fun. Do it because there's actually a reason. Now, these are all the resources I used. There's a lot of them, right? But there's like the query variables on there. There's a nice table template that somebody uploaded to GitHub. So if you need to do an address book that looks like a table in an address book, then you can do that. The whole REST API I also put in there for convenience. And then in terms of creating this demo, I've actually put up the Northwind database, how to actually add that, the pie chart that appeared on the left-hand side, and also those display templates I use for the Word template and the company ones are also on that link there as well. It's on my OneDrive. And that concludes the presentation. I realize that was super fast. Hope it wasn't too quick. There is no other related content except how to contact me. So that brings us to please complete your survey. And anyone got any questions? We're like right on time, so I could probably take a couple of questions, but probably need to get out so the next presenter can get in here. I'll be right outside if you have any questions anyway for another 15, 20 minutes or so. Yeah? Is that a lot? Thanks.